Well, hello out there. We are on the air. It is Hockey Nights and Ice. It is Thursday, May the 10th, 2012, and you are listening to Off the Crossbar Live, presented by OffTheCrossbar.com, our new home, as well as BackSportsPage.com, as always. And you thought joint collaborations were just for freestyle jazz shows. Well, we are down a man today on offthecrossbar.com. You are listening to K. Ross Reed alongside, as always, Adam Orson Wells. Adam, how are you doing today?
Light the candle for our good buddy James.
That is right. We are shorthanded today on the show. We are doing dump and chase radio. We are just trying to get the job done until our man can make it back. But we do have a great show lined up for everybody today. Adam, why don't you tell everybody exactly what we've got on the docket today?
All right. First off, we'll review some of the articles posted on the net this week in our first full week online at offthecrossbar.com, starting with From In the Box to Beating Clocks, a look at some of the NHL's penalty takers who are game breakers, which happens to be my very first article. After that, The Great One Shunned, where K-Ross asked the question, why is there no namesake trophy for the greatest player to ever lace up a pair of skates? And after that, we're going to look at a piece from our fallen comrade James Jameson, who's written an open letter to the NHL in reference to this year's playoffs, asking, what's up with that? Following that, we'll tackle the question of the week, what has surprised you the most about this year's NHL playoffs? And of those moments, which have put a smile on your face? Then we'll touch on the impending sale of the Phoenix Coyotes and what that means for the future of hockey in the desert. And finally, we'll give you our picks for the three remaining trophies that didn't get covered last week and give you our selections for the award winners. And we'll finish up with some surprising picks for who we would have nominated.
Sounds like a fantastic show. Can't wait to get started. But for now, and as always, it is time to go off the crossbar. All right, so as mentioned today, we have a lot of things to get to. So much, in fact, we have decided to waive the songs, waive the commercials. It has nothing to do with the fact that we don't have the capability to do that without James in-house. I assure you, it is because we are revved up and ready to go for an action-packed episode. Adam, we're going to start off actually reviewing some of the pieces that we have up on offthecrossbar.com this week, including your writing debut. Why don't you tell us about the series that you've started off and who your first selection this week is?
Well, the series is started. I decided to write about penalty takers who are game breakers, guys who, you know, take a lot of penalties throughout the season, but also contribute a lot to their team offensively, scoring goals, getting assists, doing everything they need to help out their team any which way they can. Oftentimes, these guys kind of get a lot of flack for taking a lot of penalties, so I want to kind of put a better light on them. Some of them I don't necessarily like that much, like some Bruins players. It'll be in next week's thing, Milan Lucic. But to start it off, I went with Scott Hartnell of the Philadelphia Flyers.
Excellent. Well, that's the thing about these kind of players is really, unless they're playing for your team, they are the kind of player that you're not supposed to like. These are the guys who make a living by being not very likable.
And they do a fine job of it, too.
Absolutely. Well, and you know what's unique about the evolution of a position like this is getting away from the violence in hockey. And where in the days when teams used to have pure fighters or pure goons on the team, you didn't necessarily see this hybrid of skill. But with today's NHL being what it is, the emphasis on speed, the moving away from violence, if you want to be a tough player, you need to be able to fill the net. You need to be able to pick up opportune goals and at least have hands enough to finish the opportunities you do get.
Yeah, well, these guys are kind of like the SUVs of the hockey world, you know? They got to be able to take a beating, but also, you know, get you there and do what you need to do, so.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, especially with the salary cap, this is an important important area right now. Every team still needs toughness, and of course we're seeing it throughout the playoffs. It's the teams who have the ability to clear out the front of their net, the teams who have the ability to defend themselves who are being successful in the playoffs this year, but at the same time, you can't just go throwing money away at a guy, you know, like from eras past, a Dave Semenko or a guy who's really just there as pure protection. Well, you mentioned that you actually had Scott Hartnell as your first pick. How did you arrive at Scott Hartnell? What brought you there?
I kind of just I looked through the points leaders of the season and I checked. I believe it was guys who had 50 or more points and over 100 penalty minutes. That narrowed it down to a few, and I just took four out of there. And, yeah, and started writing. What came up is what you can find online at www.offthecrossbar.com.
Excellent. I like that very much. And you know what I've got to say? It is not just because you're sitting across from me, not just because you will be the best man at my wedding next week. I got to tell you, I have honestly been impressed by the level and strength of writing that you were able to put out for your first piece. Based on the amount of sandbagging you were doing ahead of time, I expected something a little bit less in-depth, but you really nailed it. I actually didn't realize the evolution that Scott Hartnell had gone through necessarily. Of course, I saw him a little bit as a junior player coming up through the ranks, but really started to make a name for himself when he did combine the grit and the scoring ability together. Really interesting to see a single player be able to add that element to his game.
Yeah, he's really done a good job of it. I mean, he's gotten a reputation for not being the strongest skater and not really even being very steady on his feet. And from that has stemmed the whole Hartnell down movement, which has been a great thing.
What a really interesting way to capitalize on falling down.
Absolutely. It was started by a Flyers fan named Seth Hastings.
Yeah.
And it was just him and his buddies were just doing it as a joke to, you know, count how many times Hartnell would fall down during a hockey game. And they did it on Twitter, and eventually Hartnell found out about it. And first he's like, well, what the hell, are you making fun of me? But then he realized, hey, this is, you know, people are getting into this. And it kind of spread like wildfire. Now there's people can buy Hartnell down T-shirts, and proceeds from which go to a local Philadelphia charity of Hartnell's choice. You know, there's a counter for the amount of falls.
Oh, and he's also donating money for every time that that he gets knocked down. I mean, this is a guy who's actually opening up his own wallet and embracing his role as the lovable buffoon, as it were.
And hey, making $3.7 million this year, he can afford it.
He can afford it. And you know what? It's funny. Even with the 3.7, I would say after the year he's had, he may be in line for a raise when it comes contract negotiation time. I think he has 1 year left on his deal, right?
Which I believe is at $3.2 million, and then after that, he's up for you know.
Really? So he's on a declining contract right now. That's something to see a guy. Well, I mean, he is over the age of 30.
Exactly.
But to have a career year right now when he's had it,
of
course,
impeccable.
Yeah, hitting the golf course tomorrow probably, but it is absolutely very nice to see. So I would recommend everybody go out and check out that piece published on offthecrossbar.com. Adam Orson Welles, again, making a stellar writing debut. And I'm really excited to see what you've got next coming up in the series. You mentioned maybe somebody that you don't even particularly like that has caught your attention. What have you got coming up as your next player in the series?
Next week will be Milan Lucic of the Boston Bruins. I'm not a huge fan of him just because he's the kind of guy you love to hate. I mean, I'd take him on my team any day just like Buda Cardinal, but, you know, the guy's a punk when he plays against the Habs. But he's also a great hockey player. So.
But you know what? I've got more respect for him than I do of my my Boston Bruin nemesis, of course, my fellow blue noser from Nova Scotia, Brad Marchand.
Speaking of punks.
Well, you know what? I appreciate the fact that Lucic has and he plays physical, he plays rough, and he certainly takes no crap. But I find he doesn't necessarily cross the line as often. If you were going to pick a Bruin, I'm glad you picked Lucic. I don't want to have to kick you out of the studio in the middle of a show.
I didn't pick Lucic. Lucic's stats. Wow, that's the same. Anyhow, his stats picked him. It was all about the stats.
Excellent. You know what? Also brand new on offthecrossbar.com this week, and a piece which will also be published on backsportspage.com in the coming days, is my piece from this week, The Great One Shunned. Of course, taking a look at a peculiar absence in the National Hockey League awards. All the candidates have been announced. People are gearing up for the award show this June in Las Vegas. And it always seemed a little bit strange to me. The awards that we do have, the Maurice Richard for goal scoring, of course, the Art Ross as the leading scorer. The NHL really awards everything. We have community involvement awards. We have leadership awards. There's a trophy for the best defensive forward. We have every single measurable element of the game is specifically awarded. And for some reason, the one stat that every coach I've ever played for has told me is by far the most important for an offensive player, assists, has nothing.
What's up with that?
As James would say, what is up with that? Does that seem strange to you?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, assists make goals happen, right? So it should be something that is counted and awarded. I mean, everybody always, you know, says, hey, pass the puck, be a team player. And who did that more than your man Wayne?
Well, you know, and that's exactly it, is it's not like we are lacking a qualified candidate for a namesake award here. It's not like there's been nobody in the history of the game that has been an elite passer.
And it's not like not enough time's passed either, right? I mean, Messi has been gone for how long?
It. Gretzky retired a little bit before Messier. And, of course, in 2007, the National Hockey League introduced the Mark Messier Leadership Award. And I certainly don't mean to come across as being anti-Messier in any way.
Messier is the man.
Yeah, absolutely. I am a huge Mark Messier fan. I always have been. I really love the idea of rewarding leadership and bringing spotlight to really something, a quality that is somewhat unrecognized in sports. But my point being that Mark Messier, who is the second leading scorer in the history of the National Hockey League, is due for his namesake award. How is it possible, how is it fathomable that Wayne Gretzky is not, when the single area which he most thoroughly dominated, and that is passing the puck, has no award? It is the second most important offensive statistic, arguably the most, depending on which coach you ask. And Gretzky has been nothing short of dominant when you look at the record books. Of course, holding the single season record, 163 assists in a season is absolutely crazy. I would dare say, you know, it's a dangerous thing to say that a record is untouchable. But the guy who won the scoring title this season had 109 points, 59 of them assists, 160. I mean, Gretzky had 104 more assists than Malkin had this year when Malkin won the scoring title. And you know what? Gretzky, he holds all of these records, 23 consecutive games with an assist, excuse me. He owns all of the top seven seasons ever. Only Mario Lemieux has appeared in the top eight with him. And Mario's best season ever with 114 assists, he finished tied with Wayne Gretzky with 114 assists. It seems crazy to me that this award has not yet been done. You know, I don't even feel like an expert suggesting this.
It's plain as day. Anybody who can say, hey, wow, look at those stats. 1,963 assists. Has anybody come close to that? No.
No, well, that's, going to come close and that's to? It. No. Mark Messier, as I mentioned, the second leading scorer of all time, has 1,887 points in his career. Points, that's goals plus assists. Gretzky has 1,963 assists. Just assists. He has more assists than anybody else has ever had total points. And there is no award for assists. I don't want, you know, at the risk of sounding like Jeremy Roenick here, wake up, NHL. Wake up. This is long overdue, and it's comedic that this is not a trophy which is awarded yet.
You think there's some kind of thing? Maybe Gretzky pissed off the wrong person years ago, and that guy may still be within the NHL somewhere blocking him for it?
The famous old boys club? You know, I really, really doubt that you can hold a grudge against Wayne Gretzky in this sport to that extent.
I don't know. People are pretty vindictive. They don't forget.
Well, I mean, it's not like they are. It's not like there's a shortage of new awards. Of course, in as I mentioned, in 2007, Marc Messier was the namesake of the Leadership Award, which was introduced. And in 2010, they came up with the General Manager of the Year trophy, which I refuse to recognize as an actual award until they
give it a name.
Until they give it a name. And again, it's not like there has been a shortage. Has Sam Pollock not done enough in the 60s and 70s with the Montreal Canadiens to have earned this trophy to be named after him? I understand that he was picking from a stacked deck, as it were, having rights to all the French-Canadian talent coming out of Quebec in those days. But even still, how many Stanley Cups does a guy need to put together before he can be recognized as a guy who can put a team together? This is not a complicated process. I would be interested to be a fly on the wall in some of these meetings and find out exactly what the decision-making process is.
How about the Gauthier?
The Gauthier.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Yeah, for the
worst general manager ever.
Worst general manager ever. Yeah, we could name it after him. We could hand it to him. We could build a statue in his honor. I don't think anybody's coming close.
build it in Quebec.
There you go.
There you go.
There you go. We've got to have something to fill up that arena now that hockey's not coming to town. We will get to that later, of course. Also brand new on the site this week is James's article. Why don't you tell us what our fallen comrade was up on his soapbox about this week?
Well, I mean, the NHL has just been insane this year in the playoffs. Everybody who knows anything about hockey made their best educated guesses, and pretty much everybody looks like an idiot. What's up with that?
What's up with that?
What is up with that?
As James would say if he were here. It has been a crazy year. James takes the perspective in his article. As you know, being a lifelong hockey fan and definitely an expert, James is, the guy knows his stuff.
Absolutely.
He's had a lot of success actually predicting Stanley Cup winners in the past. He called the Chicago win in 2010.
Jersey in 03.
Jersey in 03, Tampa in 04. He picks Edmonton on a regular basis to do well, but he came very close in 06.
Yes, and in 1990 he was right on. But however, he was 6 years old at the time, and they were his favorite team. But hey, a call's a call.
Yeah, that's true. Well, yeah. On that note, I was also correct about the Canadians in '93.
There you go.
I mean,
awesome.
If we're giving ourselves pats on the back for the prepubescent predictions, then I think every kid who's seen it happen during their childhood can claim a role in that.
Hopefully one day we'll see it as adults, too.
Yeah, wouldn't it be nice?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be nice? I'm not going to hold my breath for that one, lest I run out of oxygen long in advance. Now, James, of course, picked Detroit and Pittsburgh this year to appear in the Stanley Cup Final, and I believe he had Detroit as his eventual winner, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, and to quote him, damn was I wrong.
And damn was he wrong. Yeah. And you know what? Not bad picks. How is Detroit a bad pick? How is Pittsburgh a bad pick?
Detroit is never a bad pick. Detroit is Detroit. I mean, they've been a juggernaut up until this year. What happened? Who knows? Like, why do you think? What happened to Detroit?
What happened to Detroit? You know, I think Detroit got a little bit older than people were giving them credit for. I think some of the mystique was hanging around the Detroit Red Wings a little bit longer than maybe it should have. And I think maybe the last year or two, they've rested on their laurels and maybe got some lucky bounces, so maybe people thought that they were a little stronger than they were. Maybe it's the downfall of Detroit, but you have to believe that an organization like that knows what they're doing and can evolve with the game. I would point to, at the risk of sounding like Gary Bettman, parody once again. People have not necessarily given Nashville the credit that they deserve over the last several years. They've quietly built themselves into a contending team and a team that plays a lot of very good system hockey. With Pekka in the net and the defense core that they've got, gratuitous Hal Gill plug. Go Gill! It really does seem like Nashville literally built themselves to beat the Red Wings, but then ran into a mirror image of themselves in the second round and weren't quite able to handle that.
Another shocking surprise.
But
exactly. I mean, it's not like this is unprecedented, as James says in his article. Since 1994, there have been 16 upsets with a number 7 beating a number 2. And eight times has an eight seed beaten the number one. So, I mean, it's not unprecedented, but it's just this year, there's a lot of it going on.
Well, that's just it. You know, every year there is an upset, and every year there seems to be that one series that nobody saw coming.
This year's that one playoff.
Well, and that's it. It's really been an entire year. When you go down the list, the President's Trophy winning Vancouver Canucks, ousted in five games by a number eight seed. The situation in Pittsburgh, where everybody had them at least coming out of the first round, and the vast majority of people that I speak to on a regular basis had them appearing in the Stanley Cup final. The Blues sweeping in the second round.
Yeah.
Were being swept. It's just crazy. Nobody saw that coming. Another defensive matchup. They were swept out.
Now, what do you think, though? Do you think that has anything to do with the fact that Halak wasn't there? If Halak had been there,
yes.
I really believe that it would have been a different series. Halak was on fire.
I mean,
not to knock Elliot at all, because he had a fantastic season as well. But Halak had something in the playoffs. As we saw here in Montreal,
he
takes it up a notch. When you think there's no more to do, he just does it again.
And you know what? First off, thank you very much for throwing me a life raft there. I was drowning in my words trying to describe what the hell happened in that series. The Blues, of course, being swept out of the playoffs by the Kings. Let me be very clear about that this time around. You know what? I do think that it had an awful lot to do with Halak.
The lack of Halak
instead of the Halak attack, which we were seeing a few years ago here.
Remember the Halak stop signs?
Oh, those were fantastic, awesome. Yeah.
You think they made those down to St. Louis, too? I mean, they had all the extras. It's not like you need to change the color of a stop sign.
You know what? Why not?
Yeah.
They also they were on those nice navy blue T-shirts here in Montreal, too.
Yeah.
That would also fit the Blues colors. Maybe so. But to get back to your question, you know, I really do believe that the lack of Halak was an issue. I think Brian Elliott is a fantastic goaltender, but when I picked the St. Louis Blues to win the Stanley Cup heading into the playoffs,
it was on the back of Halak.
It was on the back of Halak.
We're just having a fantastic time with these rhymes. Oh,
yeah, there we go. But again, getting down the list of upsets, you know, Nashville beats Detroit and then gets pounded by Phoenix. What? Phoenix? Really? The Phoenix Coyotes?
Hey, man, maybe it's all marketing ploy just to, you know, say, hey, hockey in the desert, we're here.
Yeah, hockey in the desert is right. You know, I didn't even have them coming out of the Chicago series.
No.
I really thought that Chicago was going to, not easily, but in six games, I think, I had them coming past Phoenix.
So, yeah.
I mean, in relative comfort. I did not expect Mike Smith to come out of nowhere. You know, it's funny, actually, listening to the Seth and Sean show last night with Back Sports Page co-owner Seth Kamens. He mentioned that he actually, not being a necessarily huge hockey fan, had to look up Mike Smith at the beginning of the playoffs just to see what he was. It turns out he's the third most common name on Facebook. There's a lot of Mike Smiths out there.
A lot of Dinesh Patels, too. I found that out looking up my buddy.
Ah, well, there you go.
Lots of them.
Not a lot around us, I assume.
No, he's the Gujarati
in the other
Mike Smith. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. I like that. but yeah, this guy comes out of nowhere. And really, isn't Mike Smith the perfect name for this? I mean, his name might as well be John Doe. Right? And just coming out of nowhere. Oh, yeah, phenomenal goaltending performance by Mike Smith. Sorry, who? I mean, this is a guy who bounced around. Where were he started in, was it Dallas? And then ended up in Tampa Bay for a little while before signing as a free agent in Phoenix in the offseason. He's been a suitcase player.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Now to be standing on his head and arguably one of the goaltenders this year who should have been, maybe had a case to be nominated for the Vezina based on the second half of his season. And look where he's at now, in a conference final.
2 years in Dallas, then he spent 4 years in Tampa. And, I mean, he never even, you know, his peak was before coming to Phoenix, he played 42 games in the season. And
that's it. And, you know, Tampa Bay is a team that has been desperately looking for a goaltender for a number of years now. And they let this guy walk out the door based on what they had seen.
Boy, did they turn red.
Or maybe, I mean, or is this just one of those things. Is this just that year? Is Mike Smith Jim Terry a la 1997?
Maybe he's pulling a Thomas from last year.
Hey, well, you know what? Hey, I, at the risk of offending some of my fellow Montrealers here, I think Tim Thomas is the real deal. I don't like the guy. I don't want to listen to anything the guy has to say. I don't like when my team plays him, but I think he's the real deal. He has such a crazy unorthodox style. You can't figure him out.
Like Dominic Hasek.
But, yeah, at the end of the day, the guy stops pucks.
Yeah.
And as a goaltender, I'm sure you can appreciate, just get the damn job done.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I have no discernible style whatsoever. I've never been trained it. I just see a puck and I try to stop it. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. I rely on strong D.
That's it.
Get well soon, James.
There you go. But you know what? Getting back, what a crazy year. I think you can look at every series and something wonky has happened. Maybe some people had Philadelphia and Pittsburgh in a close series. Maybe some people had Philadelphia coming out. I don't think anybody saw it going down the way it did.
Oh, absolutely not. That, I mean, people are still have their mouths are gaping. Nobody, it's nuts, man. That was almost a farce of an NHL series. That looked like something that we should be watching in one of our playoff series in the DWHL.
It is. I mean, you know what it was? It was beer league hockey.
Absolutely. Goaltenders, I mean, I have posted some better averages than these guys did in that series.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you look at Brizgalov came out with a save percentage under 800. Fleury, it was the same thing, under 800. And really, just a bizarre turn of events, and it didn't stop there. I mean, the Devils were supposed to be terrible. Brodeur is supposed to be too old. The team in front of him is supposed to be either too old or too inexperienced, or in the case of Ilya Kovalchuk, isn't supposed to care. I'll tell you right now, his give-a-damn meter is through the roof right now.
Yep.
He is stepping outside the European player stereotype and really turning in a gutsy performance this year in the playoffs.
Absolutely. I mean, he's averaging 24 minutes of ice time a game.
I mean, and that's something. That's something for a guy who has question marks surrounding him over the course of his career in terms of effort. For a team like the New Jersey Devils to be trusting him with over 24 minutes of ice time per game as a forward, well, obviously playing the point on the power play as well, I'm sure that contributes a few minutes a game. But that's an incredible amount of ice time for, again, a player who has ghosts or skeletons in his closet of having a reputation of not necessarily being the hardest worker.
Being a lazy Russian.
Well, I mean, but he hasn't been.
Exactly, absolutely
and
not.
And he has shattered that stereotype. As far as I'm concerned, he's making a case as arguably the best player in the playoffs this year. I know he's a defensive liability when he's out there on the point, but he's a winger playing
he's
the point.
He's making it exciting.
Exactly. I mean, that's what you get. That's the risk-reward of having him out there.
And he's third in the playoff scoring right now with 12 points, 5 goals, 7 assists. And with Claude Giroux and Danny Briere being out.
Yeah, you...
Although he's still got a way to climb, and looking at the next series coming up, it's not going to be a bunch of very high-scoring affairs.
No, it's not. And looking at that, actually, looking at the team that they will face, Washington or the New York Rangers, depending on the outcome of tomorrow night's Game 7, did you see this going 7 games?
No, Saturday night.
Is it Saturday night?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Of course, they got to
Saturday. Of course, yeah. 7 games for these guys. After the Washington Capitals successfully knock off the defending Stanley Cup champions, another team that, I'm sorry, quite literally has no business being where they are. Here's a team that fired their coach this year, has been a perennial underperformer in the playoffs, have a captain who is mired in rumors about his ice time and this, that, and the other. What's going on in Washington?
A wise man suggested to me that it may have been coaching.
Coaching. You know what? I think that man may have been wiser than he even appeared. I would definitely jump on board the coaching bandwagon. I think Dale Tallon has been exceptionally good. Or excuse me, I did that last week too, didn't I? I'm just spitting it out all over the place. Dale Hunter, excuse me, has really brought his brand of hockey to the Washington Capitals, the brand of hockey that he was, of course, famous for as a player and also famous for bringing to the junior hockey ranks with the London Knights, of which he is a co-owner. I think he's probably had the biggest impact on Alex Ovechkin.
Absolutely.
This year.
Ovechkin seems to have bought what he's selling, and, you know, he's proven it. He's playing his ass off.
Absolutely. And it's funny because everybody points out, oh, Ovechkin's ice time is down. You know, maybe he's not necessarily as happy as he once was. But when you look at the game that Ovechkin had in Game 6, obviously scored the goal, the first goal, after not scoring in the game before, kind of got the monkey off his back. But I would suggest that leading the team in hits and being up there blocking shots, hustling hard on the back check, I don't think the ice time matters.
He's playing 1946 a game.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's not...
But when you've got... And Ovechkin's history is a history of 23 to 24 minutes a game, putting up those Kovalchuk-like numbers, I guess we would call them now. Mm. But it's very interesting to see what Dale Hunter has done with this team. You even listen to Alex Ovechkin after the games and when he's talking to the press, and he's saying...
Different Ovi.
Yeah, well, he's saying things like, it doesn't matter what my ice time is, let's just talk about wins. This is about the team, this isn't about me. All of a sudden, he's really grown into that C on his chest.
Yeah, absolutely. He's matured. I mean, I don't know, it must directly coincide with Hunter coming in, because Ovechkin was just in the tank, you know, ever since, probably when Boudreaux sat him in overtime and
yeah.
the action thing. That
well,
was...
it's been a little bit of a funk, and it's funny to say, Ovechkin with 38 goals or 35 goals that he had last year, maybe it was 36, whatever, to be in the mid-30s and to say, oh, he's a disappointment. Meanwhile, Pacioretty hits 35 this year in Montreal, and, you know, they're ready to throw the only parade we'll see in a long time.
But again, though, that's an issue of expectations going into the season.
Of course.
Pacioretty, I mean, there were questions as to whether the guy would walk. I mean, that didn't go on for long, so it was pretty apparent pretty quickly
yeah,
that he
yeah.
would recover fully. But would he ever be the same? Would he have lost the edge, you know, so on and so forth? And it turns out he didn't, and he had a great season for the Habs. And Ovechkin, I mean, yeah, Ovechkin's got to have high
Well, yeah, when you're
freaking Ovechkin.
When you're a guy who's put in 60, 35 is the disappointment.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I would rather have an Ovechkin who scores 35 and plays the way he's been playing since the playoffs started.
Of course, yeah.
And
he wants to come with heart and make it happen.
And he's getting better and better yeah. as the playoffs go on, which is scary.
Yeah.
Because we all know that if Ovechkin hits fifth gear, look out.
Yeah, if they can get past the Rangers, it's gonna go down.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, especially with Holtby.
Yeah,
I mean,
who'd have thought this 22-year-old kid would be
unbelievable.
As solid as he is.
Unbelievable. And actually, you know what? We've got some questions of the week coming up, some responses to our question of the week, where we will get into Braden Holtby.
Yep, one of our guys mentions him for sure.
Absolutely. And speaking of segues, let's take a look at our question of the week, or cue the dub, as the kids on the street are calling it these days. We'll start off with some of your responses. I know we actually had an overwhelming amount of responses this week to our question of the week. The forms are coming in on offthecrossbar.com. We're blowing up Facebook. We've got some Twitter responses. Even my lovely fiance has gotten in on the action. Of course, the question of the week is, what has been the biggest surprise of the year so far in the playoffs? And of those surprises, which has put a smile on your face? And this is a question that was put together by Mr. James Jameson to correlate with his article this week. Why don't you tell us what you've got off the top?
Well, first of all, I'm going to start this by saying I posed this question to a bunch of people at my work and the people that I knew, all my email friends. I kind of forgot the pleasant surprises part, the what's made you smile. So most of my stuff is just what has surprised you about the NHL this year.
That's all right. It's Dump and Chase Radio. Just get the job done.
All right. So the first one here we've got from Dinesh Patel. The biggest surprise that Claude Julien hasn't been fired yet after losing in the first round.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, what do we think? Is this a serious comment?
Absolutely.
Was there
a
smiley face after this? Was there?
No, Dinesh does not mess around when it comes to questions about hockey.
Interesting. So he expects Claude Julien to be fired.
Yeah, I don't think he's alone in that either. I mean, you know, to go from defending Stanley Cup champion to that fast. It's
yeah.
A lot of times people look to the coaches. I mean, they're looking at Vigneault to maybe get axed or, you know, sent on his way, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, the whatever that situation is with Vigneault out there right now. That's an interesting proposition. It really is.
I don't know if it's worth firing him.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? Can you fire a guy less than 12 months after he wins a Stanley Cup? If they don't make the playoffs, maybe.
But they did
come into the playoffs as a number two seed.
Yeah.
And maybe, just maybe, if Washington were to have been swept in the second round by the Rangers, I could see that happening. You know what? It's an interesting perspective. I don't think I'm going to jump on that bandwagon quite yet.
Not yet.
What if Washington wins the Stanley Cup?
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, let's knock on wood. But it is possible. Can you be angry at that team at that point?
No.
It's an interesting... That is, you know what? That is the most surprising answer to the biggest surprise so far. I like it. What else have we got?
Thanks, Patel.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Steve Bloomfield, one of my buddies in hockey on Wednesdays, he says, there have been so many surprises this year. The question is really where to start. The biggest surprise to me is that Florida and Ottawa even made the playoffs. With that out of the way, the biggest playoff surprise is how the LA Kings bitch slapped Vancouver and St. Louis. I'm not completely surprised they won. I'm just shocked they've only lost one game in the process. With the roster they have, I thought they were better than the eighth place team, but how they handled St. Louis in four games, four pretty easy games, is shocking.
Wow, you know what? It was nice of Steve to write that email from inside of my head. I don't know how he got there. I don't know where he got his information, but that is exactly the case that I would make as well, looking at the biggest surprise of the playoffs. And it's funny because if you go back and check the backsportspage.com logs from the preseason predictions, I actually had the Los Angeles Kings as a dominant team through the regular season.
You did.
When they hadn't scored a goal by Christmas, I kind of jumped off the bandwagon. And yet here they are, making a legitimate run. That is a dead shot. And not, you know what, maybe not a shock that they could beat some teams, but to have lost a single game through the first two rounds of the playoffs is incredible against the number one and number two seed.
Goaltending and what, Dustin Brown?
Yeah, you know what, Dustin Brown, he's turning into my Hal Gill is what's happening. I can't get enough of this guy. He is pure class. And in my opinion, honestly, one of the most underrated and one of the most complete hockey players in the game. You mark my words, I think Dustin Brown will be one of those guys who surprises people over the course of his career. I see him as a potential Hall of Famer if he can get himself a Stanley Cup at some point during his career. But you know what, speaking of the LA Kings and that big surprise, there's a very interesting parallel going on this year. And we didn't talk about this before the show. I wanted to save it and get an honest, guttural reaction from you here. In 2004, when the Tampa Bay Lightning won the Stanley Cup, Daryl Sutter was the coach of the number 8-seeded Calgary Flames. Now, he, en route to the Stanley Cup final, knocked off the number 1 seed, the number 2 seed, and the number 3 seed, before eventually losing in the final to John Tortorella, Brad Richards, and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Right now, currently, in 2012, Daryl Sutter is the coach of a number 8 seed Los Angeles Kings team, which has already knocked off the number 1 seed, the number 2 seed, and is currently matched up against the number 3 seed. If they win, and the New York Rangers can continue their run, he will meet John Tortorella and Brad Richards in the Stanley Cup final.
Jesus, you've just blown my mind.
Now, is that a ridiculous parallel? I mean, for either of those two things, for Tortorella and Richards to be paired up somewhere else and to make it, or to have a chance of making it, to a Stanley Cup final again, is crazy. You think about coaches that have left, players that have followed them, and appeared in two Stanley Cup finals. That's got to be a rarity. I don't have the numbers on it. But then, a number 8 seed, coached by the same man, knocking off a 1, 2, and potentially 3 seed en route. That's a hell of a storyline.
That's nuts.
I mean, that is a parallel.
History may just repeat itself.
It may. It may. And you know what? If James has his way and Brad Richards comes to life again in the Stanley Cup Finals, I'm sure he'll have 15 goals in the final series. Wouldn't it be something if that were to come to fruition?
Mind-blasting.
That's right. You know what? I like those funky numbers. It's a lot of fun there. What
Good
do you
job
give
on the research.
Thank you very much. You know what? I do have moments.
Indeed.
I do have moments.
Indeed.
What have you got up next? Answering the question, what has been the biggest surprise of the NHL playoffs so far this year?
This one actually comes in from my hero, my pop.
Oh, hey, Mr. Son. Wells.
Yes, sir. Hey, son, Vancouver and St. Louis's respective collapses against the LA Kings were big surprises, as was Boston's to the Caps. But for me, the biggest surprise was the Flyers' capitulation to New Jersey after Philadelphia beating out Pittsburgh, albeit in a non-Stanley Cup set of a seriously high-scoring series. Against the Devils, the Flyers seemed to have fielded an entirely different team from their Grinders and Battlers, who absolutely overwhelmed and trounced Pittsburgh in their opening series. Go figure. The remaining field, except for Washington and or New York, are surprises, but the surprises are spelled SMITHBRODEUR and 2UICK. Philly's demise is still the biggest surprise to me.
Yeah, there is some insight. Does he need a job writing? We're looking for a feature writer for the site. I think Nelson can do it.
We should bring our dads in as guest hosts one day.
I would love to do that. Absolutely. You know what? The NHL teams get to take their dads on the road with them. We can take our dads to the basement with us. Why not?
Wicked.
What a well-thought-out response. I'm going to flip your piece of paper around and take a look at that. You know what? I think that's pretty insightful. I really do. New Jersey, what do you think happened in New Jersey? What do you think?
Like I said, man, Martin Brodeur, I mean, it was a variable, right? You're either going to get old, beaten down Martin Brodeur, which, you know, you kind of saw some glimpses of during the season, or you're going to get Martin Brodeur, who's been there and done that, and that's exactly what you're getting. This
Absolutely.
Guy, he's a stud. Martin Brodeur, you can't write him off. You know, we've spoken about as to whether he'll be back next season or not. I don't know.
If he wins a cup, he won't be.
Yeah, if he wins a cup, he won't be. If not, it'll be like, well, look what I did
here. He could be, yeah. And you look at some of the younger guys on that team, your Henriques, your Larsons. Yeah, there's some potential there.
Absolutely.
If he comes close to this year, he may be downwind of another Stanley Cup. And if anybody could light a fire, it's definitely this guy.
Yep.
And you know what? Something your dad, Mr. Wells, actually hinted at there, the Flyers seeming to have fielded a completely different team.
Yeah. Where did they go?
I would suggest, actually, I will take that a step further and say that I think the Flyers brought the exact same team to the ice, but got a completely different response. I feel like the fact that they were able to chip, aggravate, and generally just get under the skin of the Pittsburgh Penguins was the downfall of Pittsburgh in that first series. And that's, they spent a lot of time chasing them around. They spent a lot of time worrying about the Flyers instead of playing their own game. And I would suggest that the New Jersey Devils did the exact opposite. I really feel, watching the series, that Philadelphia was making an effort to bring that style of game. And when New Jersey did not respond, they didn't know what to do.
Yeah, they kept playing their game. And they just, they've outplayed them.
It is. It's a classic matchup of styles. You've got the young, snot-nosed, in-your-face, let's-get-under-your-skin mentality versus the wise old veterans who say, maybe in the regular season, kid.
Yeah, that's
this
it.
This one, I mean, counts.
Five games to do it. I mean, who would have thought? This team basically ran over the Penguins.
Who were a legitimate Stanley Cup favorite.
Absolutely. I mean, Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Staal, Fleury, I mean, all these guys. And they.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, Fleury hadn't put up numbers like that since Pee Wee Hockey, probably, you know.
I would be willing to bet he was much better in Pee Wee than he was, in this first series. And you know what's funny? I've actually heard some people allude to the fact that they think this could be the downfall of Marc-Andre Fleury. That
he's going to go Luongo.
He has proven himself in the past, and again, as a kid at the World Juniors, to be able to crack under pressure. Now, he had an amazing team in front of him, but Is he what he appeared to be? And I have a feeling that next season is going to define the career of Marc-Andre Fleury. Is he a goaltender who was pretty good for a little while and had a great team in front of him? Or is he a legitimate contending all-star? Because I'll tell you right now, if the Marc-Andre Fleury that we saw in this year's playoffs shows up in Sochi in a couple of years to play for Team Canada, they're going to run him out of the country.
Oh, yeah.
They are not going to have anything to do with him.
He and Luongo can ride the bus back from wherever the hell they came, and that's it. But, you know, and you look at Fleury, yeah, he won a cup. But you know who was in front of him? Hal Gill.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Yeah. But that being said, I hear the whispers. I don't think it's true. I will have some thoughts on Marc-Andre Fleury as we get into some later discussions in the show. What have you got up next for biggest surprise so far?
One of my other coworkers, Angie D'Agosto, says Washington. They look like a write-off and coming back to make the playoffs. Hoping to eliminate New York, that would be awesome.
Very insightful. Absolutely. Once again, how many answers could there be to this question? Name a team that's still alive. That's surprising. Name a team that's out. That's surprising. I mean, unless you're looking at the New Jersey Devils beating the Florida Panthers, everything has been a surprise.
Yeah.
Look, if the New York Rangers win tomorrow night, I will have predicted every second round series wrong. And I'm not even ashamed of that. The way the playoffs are going this year, that's just the kind of thing that's going to happen. The Blues being swept?
Yeah, that's
crazy.
Just wrong.
Crazy. really, really an interesting breakdown. So I'm going to go into one or two of the answers that I've got here, taking a look at Cue the Dub, as the kids are calling it. If anybody's got any responses listening live, please feel free to drop us a line. The email address is krossreed@offthecrossbar.com, and that will be sent directly to us here live on the show. And what are we going to get to here? Well, let's go first. Gail from Truro, Nova Scotia. Her sentiment was a surprise at Philly's second round exit after eliminating the Penguins in such a bizarre fashion. You would assume that a team who knocks off a legitimate Stanley Cup favorite is going to succeed in the second round, or will at least have some success in the second round. Outside of the first game, where they clearly had New Jersey in a very tired situation, they didn't do anything.
Jersey, in that series, I mean, yeah, they won the first game, but they had no consistency. They didn't bring their A game. They didn't have the goaltending. I mean, it wasn't as bad as a series as the first series or first round was, but it still wasn't great. And they're going up against Berger. And then what was
the
game? In game four, Jersey comes back and scores four unanswered goals. Like, if there was any hope before that, it was gone then.
You know what it really is? And this is a time of year when your goaltender needs to steal some games for you. I know that you can't rely on them all the time, every game. Some teams have. It usually catches up with you. But Briskalov is, I mean, he's straight up losing games.
Yeah.
For this team. I mean, the goal off of Clarkson's foot. I mean, what was Kimmo Tiimonen thinking?
Oh, who knows?
Don't
man.
Give the puck to Briskalov? Are you kidding?
No, that was just immediately he must have known I've made a completely horrible and grievous error. And, you know, but I mean, who was more shocked than he?
Well, exactly.
My God, it just, I mean, we didn't even see it. We had to watch the replay like three times before we actually saw it go in.
And that's exactly it. Unbelievable. Wow. Side note to Gail's comment, always the Sidney Crosby supporter, always the thorn in the side of Adam O. Wells. The biggest smile of this year's playoffs came from when Sidney Crosby said in an open interview that he did not like any of the Philly players.
They make me sad.
It was rather shocking coming from Crosby, at the same time humorous. And you know what?
You're fair awesome, assessment. Gail. You're awesome.
Fair assessment.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was a funny moment. Watching him knock the glove away. Why did you do that? And then the look on Sid's face. Why did I do that?
Because he took my Kool-Aid.
Well, because I don't like the guy. What are you stupid? Like, what? And it's fun to see Sidney showing that personality. It's fun to see him not trying to be the face of the game, but rather just giving an honest answer. I was frustrated. I don't like those guys. I don't like any of those guys. A good, genuine, honest answer. But immediately what pops into my head seeing that is, what about Max Talbot? Don't you like Max? You gotta like Max.
Everybody likes Max.
You want a Stanley Cup with the guy. I'm sure you've hugged. How can you dislike a guy who gives you hugs? Come on. Really interesting response. So, moving along, we have another response. We've got Oliver in Montreal who wrote in to say that his biggest surprise has been that the Capitals are still playing given that they have a minor league goalie. And here's something that we've essentially forgotten about Braden Holtby, is that coming into this year, into this playoff year, he was third on the Washington Capitals depth chart, sitting behind Thomas Vokoun and Michael Neuwirth. And, of course, both of these guys end up hurt. Here comes Braden Holtby, straight up from the American Hockey League. And, I mean, he's 7 wins, 6 losses. Yeah. Not stellar in the win-loss department, but putting up fantastic numbers.
195 goals against and, a 935 save percentage.
Exactly, exactly.
Not bad for a minor leaguer. I mean,
and a 22-year-old kid playing 863 minutes so far in the playoffs, leading all goaltenders in minutes played. So it's not like he's coming up and getting an easy ride.
Nope,
he's not coming up and being carried by a strong team. It's not like he walked into Detroit in the late 90s like Chris Osgood did.
At 6 saves a night, you're fine.
Well, and that's exactly it. Here's Braden Holtby comes up, and it's funny you mentioned the 1.95 goals against average, letting in less than 2 goals a game, and he is 6th among active goaltenders. That's the kind of year it has been in the playoffs. These goalies are absolutely stealing the show.
Let's see. Well, in game one, he faced 14 shots, 28 in game two. Game three was the triple overtime marathon in which he faced 49 shots and let in 2 goals. I mean, my God, he's averaging, he's over 20 shots in almost every single game, 38 shots. In game five. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
This kid, he's the real deal.
He is the real deal. And you
he's
know what
be
I
in the minor leagues next year.
And you know what impresses me most about Braden Holtby is the swagger.
Yeah.
It's that, and it's funny because at the beginning of the playoffs, I heard, I forget who, it was a commentator on one of the major sports stations say, this guy has a reputation in the minor leagues of being Ron Hextall-like. In that, it doesn't matter how many goals he gives up. He plays to win. And that's where his focus is. He's confident to the point of arrogance at some points. He fights for his space in the crease. He's not afraid to use the paddle, the blocker, the headbutt, whatever is necessary. And that's something we haven't seen from a lot of goalies lately. Outside of Tim Thomas's bad attitude, we haven't seen a lot of attitude between the pipes in recent years.
That's really the key to goaltending, especially at that level of hockey, is you've got to be confident. You've got to be smooth with your stuff. You've got to, you know, you've really just got to be in your head and in their head and let them know, I don't give a damn. Yeah, fine, you scored 2 goals. The next one's not going in. We're going to score goals on you, and that's it. Get out of my crease.
Absolutely.
Physical, hard play. This kid is the real deal. I said it again.
Very nice. Very nice. I see you've got your next stack in front of you. What have you got up next?
Tom Lawlers from Montreal says, I know it's playoff hockey and it's a contact sport, but the level of cheap shots seems higher than usual. Since the salary cap, they're not the dominant teams anymore. The old football saying of on any given Sunday can now apply. The surprise for him, the LA Kings from nowhere to conference finals in 4 short months based on coach only.
Ooh, based on coach only. You know what? We've heard the LA Kings answer before. You know some insightful people.
I do.
I should go hang out at your office more.
You should.
This is interesting
stuff.
It's
what makes the days tolerable.
I can see that. I can see that.
And Tom is also a great hockey player.
Really?
Yes.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, Tom, if you ever need a spare, the Men with No Name, we play on Sundays, mostly in Pierrefonds. Feel free to bring your stuff.
Yep.
So taking a look at Daryl Sutter, did he make that big of a difference?
Yes. I mean, yeah, he probably made up his mind that he wants to repeat history, as you said, and that's what's going to happen. I mean, it's not just Sutter. You've got the wicked players we discussed earlier, Jonathan Quick, Dustin Brown, Anze Kopitar. I mean, they're...
Yeah, Kopitar has really woken up in the playoffs, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's turning around.
He looks like Anze Kopitar again, because...
Like he should be on a cover of video game again.
Yeah, well, because for the I would say, first 7 months.
It's been a while, yeah.
He just looked like a shell of himself. I can't help but wonder if maybe he had an injury that wasn't disclosed, or if something else was happening.
I mean, he didn't have that bad of a season after all, though. He played a full 82 games, and he had 76 points and was a plus 12. So, I mean, it's not...
But you expect... And I guess it's very similar to what we were saying about the expectations for Ovechkin. You expect him to be a game-breaker on a regular basis.
Yeah.
He put up the points. He did it quietly, and I think that maybe that says something. A guy like Anze Kopitar... how old is he? He's young, right? He's
Kopitar still is relatively 24 new. Years old.
Yeah, 24 years
25
old.
25 in August.
So you expect to see a guy with that kind of talent show a little more flash. You expect to see him on the highlight reel. You expect to see him scoring opportune goals. So it's interesting. I didn't think he even had that many points. So maybe I'll bite my words a little bit. But you know what? I don't remember seeing him, and this is very much a case of, well, what have you done for me lately?
Maybe that's the thing, though. Maybe all that flash was, you know, when he was a younger kid, I mean, he's 24 years old.
Yeah.
But when he was younger by NHL standards, you know, he had that flash, that pizzazz, that, you know, check me out kind of thing. But maybe now he's just settled into a role as a reliable point getter. I mean,
yeah, clearly.
He scored his last three seasons, or before this, he had 66, 81, and 73 points.
Well, maybe I should start staying up later at night to watch the LA Kings game.
And it's worth it.
Apparently. Not if you like goal scoring.
Well, no, but hey.
Yeah, but hey, exactly. So Sutter makes the difference. That is an interesting perspective. And, you know, one thing I will say about watching the Los Angeles Kings after Daryl Sutter took over is they seem to be, I want to say, setting up better. They've always been a work ethic kind of team, but they've been very north-south. They charge, they crash, which works for the style of hockey they play normally. But there's enough talent on that team with Richards, now with Carter, with Dustin Brown, Anze Kopitar, Justin Williams, Dustin Penner. I mean, you can go down the list. They should be scoring an awful lot more than they do. The second lowest scoring team in the National Hockey League during the regular season. I think only Minnesota was below them. I think even the Columbus Blue Jackets scored more goals than they did. They need a little more side-to-side with the puck. They need to be getting into the zone and then looking for those horizontal passes a little bit more. They need to use the talent that they've got, and I think that's something that Sutter brought to the table. But very insightful comments. Like I said, I'm going to go hang out at your office one of these days. You got to invite me to one of those bowling parties again. I got to meet some of these fine VLAN folks. So what else have we got up next year?
Well, here's a quickie. Peter from Pennsylvania, the Devils.
The Devils.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, yep. Peter. Peter from Pennsylvania. Yeah, you can't go wrong. Absolutely. The Devils have been a big, big surprise this year for all the reasons that we have previously discussed. We've got Brodeur. He's supposed to be too old. The young players are supposed to be too young. The other older guys are supposed to be too old. Shocking to see them where they are. And I know at least one person in New York City right now who has got his fingers crossed and is holding his breath for a New York-New Jersey showdown, because wouldn't that be something?
That'd be pretty exciting. Oh, sorry, just to correct, Peter's not Pennsylvania, it's Connecticut.
Oh, Connecticut.
My bad.
Oh, there you go. It sounds better. You got to move to Pennsylvania, Peter.
Peter from PA.
Yeah, it's got a better ring to it, just for the sake of radio.
Next up, Chris Otel from Montreal would have to say the LA Kings.
All
again,
right.
We've
we're on the Kings bandwagon again. What else have we got?
Alfie Gentile, the biggest surprise of this year's playoff series. There have been many, but for me personally, it would be the cool, calm, and unflappable play of 22-year-old puck stopper Braden Holtby.
Yeah, and there you go. And that's just it, unflappable. Like I said, the guy's got 7 wins, but 6 losses.
Yeah.
And he's cool with that.
Yeah.
He's good. It's that swagger. Like you said, this guy will have a job in the National Hockey League this year. What Washington is going to do with Vokoun right now will be very interesting to see. He was good in the regular season.
He was.
Up until sure, being injured. Not Holtby right now good.
No. No, they would not be where they were if Vokoun was still here.
Or maybe he does find that level in his game. We don't know. The thing about Vokoun is, for all the years he's had of stellar numbers and great goaltending performances, only 11 playoff appearances. And actually, it's funny, 22-year-old wet behind the ears Braden Holtby is now the Washington Capitals' most experienced playoff goaltender their roster. At 13 games, he has passed Vokoun. Neuwirth, I think, had 8 or 9 games in his career. So very interesting to see this guy who is an inexperienced rookie all of the sudden taking over the franchise lead in playoff experience. It's been a hell of a year.
Yep. My final email answer would be from Paul Dion from the Montreal area. Answer to the question of the week, the elimination of Philly and Vancouver. I mean, yeah,
Yeah, well, there you go. And especially again, we haven't spent a lot of time on Vancouver, but the President's Trophy winners, Stanley Cup finalists from a year ago, and a team deep in talent and well-coached for the most part, digging a graceful bow. As George Costanza would say, like an old man into a bath. just easy does it. Oh. We'll see you on the golf course.
Goaltending? I mean, goaltending not showing up of the stars who should be showing up.
But you know what? The Kings even beat Schneider. And that's the thing. I put that on the strength of the Kings more so than the weakness of the Canucks. I think this was a Kings team that was not going to be denied in the first two rounds. And as it stands right now, I will give them the kiss of death and recommend them as my projected Stanley Cup champion. I'm going back to my own bandwagon from November, October.
Back on the wagon.
Back on the wagon, exactly. I have got 2 more responses very quickly to our question of the week, saving some of the comedic relief for last. My lovely fiance, soon to be wife in another 9 days.
Nine days,
absolutely. Dale, not Hunter, not Talon, Dale the Dr. Robertson, writing in to say her biggest surprise of the playoffs, quote, there was that one time during the first round when you turned to me and said, I don't need to watch the second game of the doubleheader, you pick something, and then handed me the remote. I was shocked.
That is love.
That is love, isn't it?
That's love.
And a shock. I mean, by far the biggest shock of the first round.
Yes, absolutely.
And we have Seth from New York who wrote in response to Dale, ha ha ha, ha 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 ha.
Well said, Seth.
Yeah, that is our Back Sports Page co-owner, believe it or not, one of the more eloquent people I know, writing in specifically to laugh at me. Thanks, Seth. That is greatly appreciated. You are listening to Off the Crossbar Live, presented by BackSportsPage.com, and of course, our new home, www.offthecrossbar.com. Check it out to see all of the stories that we have been mentioning today. You will get a live, we are live right now. You will get a downloadable, streamable, and podcast version of this show and every show we've ever done. Went back and did some listening to some of the earlier ones. We were just kids 10 weeks ago, weren't we?
We were. We've come a long way.
We have come a long way.
And we miss you, James. It's just not the same without you on our 10-week anniversary.
As they say in Washington, looks like we've made it.
Oh, wow. What do we have next?
Next up, we are going to, normally in the place where we would take a break, we are just going to keep on running. We do not have the ability to play music. We do not have the ability to play commercials. We are fumbling around in the dark without you, James. You got to get better soon. You got to come back and help us. But for now, we're going to take a look at the impending sale of the Phoenix Coyotes. Can you believe this? Here is a team that has not won a playoff series since 1987. And on the very same day that they find themselves advancing to the conference finals, they have a potential owner in Phoenix. Is this exciting or what?
Yes, absolutely. It's huge. And sucker Quebec. But we'll get to that after.
Oh, will we?
Oh, but I mean, it's fantastic. I mean, this club, they're a good hockey team. They're not in the hockey market, but with the run they're putting on, I think they're going to get a lot of conversions.
Wait, listen, it's a cliche, but isn't it the truth? Everybody loves a winner.
Yep. And hey, I mean, even if they do end up, eliminated, to come this far is huge for these guys. And they're loving it. They've got to be on top of the world right now, no matter what. And they're ready to play. They're going to come out, and they're going to do their best to kick ass.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So, I mean, after 3 years of this franchise's future being up in the air, they were going to move to Winnipeg. They were going to move to Kansas City. They were definitely going to move to Quebec City.
Oh, of course. That's why we've got a $400 million arena.
And as of today, they have a preliminary agreement in place to sell the team to a group headed by Greg Jamieson, who is a former San Jose Sharks CEO, and I believe, according to Orson Welles' research, very, very experienced in the world of not just hockey, but all-around professional sports management. This guy has a track record of a winner and a track record of, more importantly for the Phoenix Coyotes right now, making money.
Money. Yeah, from 1980 to 87, he served as director of marketing for the Dallas Mavericks of the NBA, where he was pivotal in raising the club from expansion status to a big-time moneymaker and one of the most respected front offices in the NBA. So that right there, big time. I mean,
oh, absolutely. Listen, and I know that Dallas is a great basketball market right now. Obviously, not familiar with the metrics of the NBA. I don't know much about the business of basketball. I'm a casual fan at best. But I assume it's the same as in any other sport. Making money as an expansion franchise is not an easy thing to do.
Yep.
Which is good, because neither is making ice in Arizona.
But so he went on from the Mavericks in 87, stayed in the NBA to the Indiana Pacers, where he served as their vice president of business operations. And again, they were on an annual basis considered among the NBA's top clubs in sponsorships, ticket sales, team merchandise, and broadcast production. So, I mean, these are all things that are going to help a hockey team in a big way.
Absolutely.
Especially in a market where it's not necessarily a front runner as far as people's choices. So if he can market the hell out of them, you know, bring that experience that he's got.
Oof. We got a stat monkey so talented. He's got stats on guys that don't even play the game.
So
I got to commend you on your research today, my friend. You are prepared. You were terrified when James called you and said he wasn't coming, weren't you?
I was pretty scared. I mean, when I know James, I get a little nervous. You know?
So, of course, now this deal is still in the preliminary stages, and Greg Jamieson will need to negotiate a new lease deal with the city of Glendale on the Jobbing.com arena. Now, that could be an issue. Of course, last year, the Phoenix Coyotes were set to be sold to another businessman in the Phoenix area, Matthew Holsizer, but it was blocked by a conservative watchdog group known as the Goldwater Institute. Now, while they didn't actually do anything, they did threaten legal action over the sale of bonds for the parking rights. And it's actually kind of funny, because when you check the papers, the online postings of local newspapers in the Phoenix area, there's actually quite a split about whether or not the city wants the team.
Well, because, I mean, the city is having to shove down their throat by the Goldwater Institute that this is just a drain on your tax dollars, you know, we're pissing money away, we're hemorrhaging, and that's not really the case. I mean, these guys are going to paint the best picture they can to get their way, but if you can get fans into those seats, selling tickets, selling concessions, selling all these things, you're not going to bleed money. It's a recipe to print money. I mean, what do we got to do?
It is if they do it. And you know what? Another thing to consider is that building's already there.
Absolutely.
That building has already been paid for, and you are just going to lose your investment. At some point, you have to decide whether you want to write off the money that has been spent or whether you want to bring in a tenant, an anchor tenant, into that building who will sell concessions, parking, merchandise, tickets, and what have you for the next 20 years.
Yeah, you got to think about the sunk costs, right?
Well, and that's it. You know, it does go against a technical business knowledge to say, well, you're already in it this far, you might as well spend it. But you're not throwing good money after bad in this situation, because you have a framework for a successful team. And you've got the kind of businessman coming into town who is capable of building a winner. He has a proven track record everywhere he has been. And I'm certain that he's not even looking at this deal if he thinks he's going to lose money.
Of course not, because the guy's got brains. And I mean, this is a venue that'll hold what, 17,125 people for hockey matches and more for basketball and concerts and so on and so
sure.
forth.
Sure, yeah.
You know, it was built in 2000, or sorry, opened in 03. So it's a brand new building. It's not even 10 years old yet.
Yeah, it is a beautiful facility as
Absolutely.
Well. I have not actually visited the facility, but I did spend some time doing some research as well today. I get nervous when James doesn't show up, too. It is a beautiful arena. The Jobbing.com arena is a great setup. And let's face it, anywhere you can make ice in the desert,
yep.
play it. Now, an interesting fact is that this lease still does have to go before the Glendale City Council to be approved. But there are several reports that say at least four members have agreed to a general framework of a deal, and that that deal would be not a 3 or 4 year deal like the Hulsizer one was rumored to be, but rather a 10-year deal.
And that's good. A long-term contract like that, if you've got someone who's got the money, the funding, and willing to put it in, I don't see how they can write this off as a loser.
Yeah.
You've got a team who's going into the conference finals.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, it's a no-brainer as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely.
They can't shoot this down.
No, and you know what? I don't think that they will. I feel like what this team needs is that consistency. As we mentioned coming into the top of this story, it's been 3 years now that this team has finished hockey seasons not knowing where they would start the next one. I have a feeling that maybe bringing in free agents is going to get an awful lot easier if you've got a 10-year deal in place. Guys who play the game want to go to a winner,
yeah.
and Phoenix has proven itself this year to be a winner.
Yeah.
And if you don't have to worry about the drama surrounding the team, clearly you're not going to be in the big pressure markets like your Toronto, Montreal, New York, Vancouver. You know what? This is an ideal situation for a lot of players. A lot of players would love to go to a team that is a contender but has no pressure.
Yeah.
That is a beautiful scenario. And once you start, I mean, let's face it, the weather ain't bad in Glendale.
And hey, they've got some fantastic golf there too, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Not too
absolutely.
Far to go.
And you know what? This deal looks like it's going to go down quickly. Gary Bettman was on record as saying, I would hope it comes... Oh, excuse me.
Can't read
I would hope it can be... Yeah, I can't read Bettman's writing. That's exactly it. Bettman sent me this note in his own handwriting. I would hope it can be counted in weeks rather than months.
Yeah.
So it looks like they could have an owner in place before the Stanley Cup is skated. Now, does he get a ring if they win this year?
I would give him a ring.
I think that's a bandwagon. Yeah, you know what? I'll give him a ring.
Absolutely.
Because who else is going to get the owner's ring?
Yep.
Who else are they going to give it to? We keep telling the same joke over and over again.
Still funny.
And another thing to consider is that the city of Glendale will actually adopt its budget for the coming year on June 12th. So I would look at that date as a potential
soft deadline.
They're going to want to know.
I'd say that's the hard deadline because they'll need that in there for all their budgeting, all that kind of stuff. And that might be what they need. You've got to expedite it. Get it through there nice and quick. You've got a little over a month now. Get her done.
You know what? Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think if the deal doesn't go through by then, it will probably be on some sort of small technicality. I'm not really concerned if it gets past that date that it won't happen.
No, but
just because of the strength of this agreement. Like I said, a 10-year deal, that's concrete. I really like that. Well, we talked about what this means for the city of Phoenix. Let's take a step back and do one of our favorite things here on Off the Crossbar Live, presented by BackSportsPage.com and OffTheCrossbar.com. Let's make fun of Quebec City a little bit. What does this mean for Quebec City, who has recently agreed to build a $400 million facility capable of housing an NHL hockey team? And let's call a spade here on the presumption that they would get an NHL hockey team. They can say whatever they want in the media. Oh, you know, no, we just happened to be interested in having an NHL hockey team.
And we had $400 million.
And we happened to be interested in building an NHL arena. The two don't really have anything to do with each other. We're not jumping the gun. We're building it for concerts and for junior hockey.
This is just further proof of the Quebec government's sense of entitlement and their idiotic actions and just... Oh, God,
Ooh, someone's trying to make the highlight reel.
from Bettman, a little quote from Bettman, we're not focused on any other place for the Coyotes other than Glendale, right? Nowhere else. Why the hell would you spend my tax dollars to build a bloody $400 million arena that's going to collect dust and be just an oversized parking lot for the rest of the moron politicians in Quebec City?
And stop for breath. Now, the $400 million price tag on this behemoth of an arena that's going to be built, actually very similar to the Consol Energy Center, which was recently built in Pittsburgh. 50% of that cost is going to be covered by the city, 50% covered by the province. Now, that sounds like a good deal. It sounds like the city and the province have got a deal to make this a reality, like they've got a plan for the money. Now, Mayor of Quebec City, Régis Labeaume, says the city will cover at least $187 million of the cost. Well, that's great news, right? They're going to pay for it. They're not, because they're not looking for that. They're not going to. Oh, by the way, $125 million of that is going to be borrowed. From who, Mr. Mayor? From who?
Our pockets.
And get this, according to a CBC report, Mayor Régis Labeaume says he would not raise municipal taxes to help pay for this project. Instead, he will cut 500 municipal jobs.
Hey, this is the same people who think separation's a good idea. They're not the most logical.
He's going to cut 500 jobs to build $400 million arena. And spend on nearly half a billion dollars, he's going to unemploy 500 people.
But at least these newly homeless people will have a really nice arena to live in when it doesn't do anything else.
Yeah, they'll have a great parking lot to panhandle from. This goes beyond asinine. This is unbelievable.
It's ridiculous. It's a good reason why people from anywhere else in Canada or the United States can look at this province and laugh at us. Just the crap that we tolerate from our government at every level, it's a joke. And they piss away money like they've just signed their first contract for $100 million. You know, it's stupid. It's awful. It's wrong.
It absolutely is. And you know what? And speaking of the furthest down that line of thinking you can go, why don't you explain, if you will, just briefly to the average listener out there who is not familiar with the Quebec political scene, how does the political party known as the Bloc Québécois feel about the Canadian federal government?
They want nothing to do with them. The Bloc Québécois wants to have the province of Quebec, which goes from Ontario to New Brunswick, not be part of Canada anymore, thus putting a giant gaping hole in our lovely country, and our happy-go-lucky super-duper government in Canada just says, sure, you guys can come and be part of our, you know, national government and help us make decisions. You're entitled to votes. You're entitled to everything you want. Here's all sorts of money. And it's all because, oh, how can I put it without swearing more? Can you jump in for a second?
Yeah, you know what? Maybe you shouldn't put that anywhere. Maybe as you fumble for those words, you should just take a deep breath. I think people out there get the picture. Is that essentially the Bloc Québécois represents a group of angry teenagers who want to move out of their parents' house but still want their parents to pay all the bills and to do their laundry and to protect them if the bad guys come knocking.
Perfect.
So, that being said, the Bloc Québécois has officially gone on record as saying the federal government should help pay for this arena. They have officially, their official stance is that they genuinely believe the federal government should help them build an arena in a place that they don't want to be part of the country anymore for a team that does not exist.
The capital of the place that doesn't want to be part of the country anymore. Notice,
exactly.
Which they call the national capital.
The national capital. Exactly. So they're looking for support from the Canadian federal government, with whom they want nothing to do with, apparently, to build an arena that they claim isn't for a hockey team.
Directed upon hopes and dreams.
There you go. And one more interesting fact on this notice. CBC poll reports that 93.27% of Canadians do not support federal funding of arenas.
No, and nor should they. I mean, we love hockey. We live and breathe hockey. But it's a game. It's a sport. The people pay lots of money to go see it. It should be funded by private entities. You know, if the government wants to kick in a little bit...
I can understand the provincial government wanting to get in because it draws a lot of tourism dollars into local government.
Right.
That makes sense
to
me.
But federally speaking, we've got much better things to spend our money on.
Oh, you think?
Yeah.
How long did your dad have to wait for medical attention?
Yeah, the new knee. He was on a waiting list for quite a few months, and it kept getting pushed back because it's an elective, right?
So $400 million pumped into that system could have done somebody some good.
Would have been a swift kick in the ass of the medical system, absolutely.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, we should definitely spend that on a team that doesn't yet exist. Brilliant. Mm-hmm. Brilliant. You know what? Before they come in, before they start piling up outside my basement door with pitchforks and torches, let's move along. We're going to remind everybody once again, you are listening to Off the Crossbar live, and we are shorthanded. It is the two-man edition of Off the Crossbar live, presented by BackSportsPage.com and OffTheCrossbar.com, and we are coming in to the backstretch of our show. So we are taking a look now at some of the awards that we did not award last week. Last week, we went through Rookie of the Year, Coach of the Year, a lot of the awards that people are very interested in, but we did save the big three for today's episode. Got to divide it up, got to keep them coming back for more. Today, we're going to take a look at the Norris Trophy, the Vezina Trophy, and, of course, the Hart Trophy. Adam, why don't you tell us what these trophies are all about and tell us who the nominees are. Actually, let's go through them one at a time. Let's start with the Norris. Tell us what it is. Tell us who's been nominated, and then we'll dig in from there.
All right. The Norris Trophy is awarded to the defenseman who demonstrates the greatest all-around ability in the position throughout the season.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent.
So our Norris Trophy nominees are Zdeno Chara of the Boston Bruins, Erik Karlsson of the Ottawa Senators, and Shea Weber of the Nashville Predators.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's first off discuss who we each have winning this trophy. And then afterwards, we're going to do something a little bit interesting. We're going to take a dark horse from the league who maybe should have been nominated, but wasn't. We're going to talk about the player the one player outside of the nominated three in each of these awards that maybe we would have taken a look at, or even that we just think deserves a nod, if not the actual trophy. Some very, very worthy candidates in the Norris Trophy this year, but quite a contrast in style of play. When you look at Chara and Weber, you see a very prototypical style defenseman in both of them. Really big body guys, throw the weight around, solid plus-minus, two-way players. They can shoot the puck. They can pick up points, particularly on the power play. But they're no Erik Karlsson.
Well, I mean, again, though, that comes back to, in my opinion anyway, rookie flair versus, you know, veteran ability and leadership. Erik Karlsson, who is my nominee who is my choice for the Norris.
Oh, we're already naming it after him, are we? Ooh, that's presumptuous.
No, but I mean, this guy, he's quite young. He's, 22 years old, something like that? Twitter would know offhand, but I could check that after, but right now I'm on my thing here. Karlsson had a 78-point season, a plus 16. You know, he was a fantastic hockey player for the Senators this year. He was a big part of the reason why they did what they did. And for me, it's a relatively obvious thing, I guess.
Yeah, well, you know what? The one knock on Karlsson, particularly coming off of last season, is his limited defensive abilities as compared to the other two candidates. But I actually have to go with you on this one, Adam. I got to tell you that, you know what? I think that his defensive game has improved to the point that he is an above-average defensive defenseman. It shows up in his time on ice. He's playing 25 minutes plus every game. So he's being trusted by a very good coach in Paul McLean to play big minutes in important situations. You don't rack up 25 minutes a night playing pure offense. But that being said, when you look at his pure offense, here's a guy who puts up nearly a point a game from the blue line, as you mentioned, 78 points 59 assists.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible. And the first defenseman to finish in the top 10 in league scoring since Paul Coffey in 1995. And if you're being mentioned in the same breath as Paul Coffey,
yeah,
and people are knocking your worthiness for a Norris nomination, those people need to give their heads a shake. Are you serious? I'm not saying that Chara isn't phenomenal and that Weber isn't phenomenal. And you know what? If I was building a hockey team, I might even take both of those guys ahead of Carlson.
Yeah.
But, if I'm picking the best National Hockey League defenseman of the last year, I am picking Erik Karlsson. He is above average defensively and in a league of his own offensively. Now, Chara is very good defensively, third in the league in plus minus at a plus 33, which is fantastic. 12 goals, 40 assists. I mean, nothing to snort at, really. Shea Weber, same thing. 78 games played, 19 goals, 30 assists, plus 21. The guy is rock solid. And like I said, if I'm going to build a team for the next 5 years around any of these guys, I'll take the two defensive guys. But if you have to hand out a trophy honestly based on what was done in the past season, it's got to be Karlsson.
Yeah.
I don't think that there's any arguing it.
No, there really isn't. And for the record, he is 21 years of age.
Excellent. I think James's fever just went through the roof. He is at home yelling at his computer right now. He may be trying to get in the car. Lisa's holding him back. He does not agree, and we know this.
Well, you know, he should have walked it off. A fever of 103.9, big whoop.
No, but seriously, feel better.
Yeah, feel better, buddy.
Let's look at the snubs.
All right.
Of all the defensemen who were not nominated, we got three who were, hundreds who were not. Who do you think maybe deserved a nod, at least for consideration?
Alex Pietrangelo of the St. Louis Blues.
All right. Good choice. I've heard whispers of his name. Sort of flew under the radar this year. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the season that he had?
Well, he had a 51-point season. It was a plus 16, 36 penalty minutes, 12 goals, 39 assists. So, you know, he's also a playmaker. You know, he's doing a good job. What was he averaging in ice time? Why don't I have that here? I'm an awful stat monkey here.
You know, he was up there.
He was up there.
He was the stud on St. Louis's back end this year. He was absolutely the stalwart on their blue line. Their go-to guy in damn near any situation. And with the exclusion of Halak, I would definitely say that the injury to Pietrangelo was one of the final nails in the St. Louis Blues coffin coming out of that second round. I think he was injured in game one, if I recall, and never really came back the same. I think he tried to play a shift, but it did not go well at all.
No.
And you know what? For my pick for the snub, I'm going to go off the radar. You're going to see this as an ongoing theme of the night. I'm not necessarily picking the guys that I think deserve the trophy. I'm picking the guys that I think had an exceptional impact on their team. And I know that's against the rules, but the show's named after me. So I'm just going to read off what I damn well feel like. And for this particular award, looking at the Norris, I'm going to go way off the board. And suggest that maybe Kimmo Tiiminen should have gotten a look.
Kimmo Tiiminen.
Kimmo Tiiminen. How did his name not come up in the best names? Kimmo Tiiminen. That's a great name.
That is a good name.
You know what? Stepping in, and I would again argue, not necessarily because of the stats that Kimmo Tiiminen put up, but certainly because of the role that he played on the Philadelphia Flyers this season. We all remember that.
Stepped up big.
Very big, very big. We all remember that Chris Pronger went out with the eye injury that turned out to be a very significant concussion.
Yeah.
And Philadelphia was really banking on Chris Pronger this year. I think that if he was in the lineup for the full season, maybe they're still alive. But
yeah,
he was not. And in that scenario, Kimmo Tiiminen, at 37 years of age, really stepped up his game and proved to be invaluable to the Philadelphia Flyers. Averaging over 21 minutes a game, at 37 years of age, is really impressive. Appeared in 76 games, not a huge goal scorer, with only 4 goals on the season, but with 39 assists,
yeah,
which is impressive, But again, I look to the intangibles. I always feel like I go back to the same arguments for a lot of my things, but you know what? I'm an old school hockey fan, and I appreciate a defensive defenseman. And that's what Kimmo Tiimonen really has proven to be, especially on a team that was as young as the Philadelphia Flyers were this year. He brought an invaluable amount of patience and calmness and puck moving ability. He's exceptional at getting the puck out of his own end. And when you've got a team, I think the Philadelphia Flyers led the league in games played by rookies this year. So to have a 37-year-old defenseman step up in place of Chris Pronger is absolutely invaluable. And I do look at the impact that these individual guys had on their team. So again, I don't think he obviously is in the running to win the Norris Trophy, but I would like to see some credit shone upon Kimmo Tiimonen for an exceptional effort this year.
Absolutely. Credit where credit is due.
Excellent. What do we got up next?
You want the Vezina, I take it, right?
Let's go.
All right. The Vezina is awarded to the NHL goaltender who is adjudged to be the best at the position. So the best goalie in the NHL for the year.
Easy enough.
Yes, sir. Vezina candidates for this season would be Henrik Lundqvist of the New York Rangers, Pekka Rinne of the Nashville Predators, and Jonathan Quick of the LA Kings.
And this has been the year of the goaltender. We were talking before we went on air tonight. This has been a crazy year for goaltenders. No. There probably could have been three more guys on this list. You look at Brian Elliott. You look at Mike Smith. There are a lot of very, very valuable goaltenders. You could even make a case for Tim Thomas again this year based on the way that the Boston Bruins started their year and the way that they played at periods during the season. To have him come in and still lock up the number two seed, he was great at points this year. Outside of all the drama, and again, on a personal level, I don't really have a good thing to say about the guy, but I will give credit where credit is due. The guy knows how to get in front of a hockey puck.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's a bit of an ass, but a great goaltender.
So getting back to the guys who actually were nominated for the trophy, Lundqvist, Rinne, and Jonathan Quick, who's your winner?
I got to go with Rinne.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, he had the most shots out of goaltenders in the NHL, the most, second, or up there in saves anyhow. His season went with a 239 goals against, 923 save percentage, and 5 shutouts. I mean, yeah, there were goalies with more shutouts. Quick had 10, Lundqvist had 8. But Rinne was just, he was fun to watch.
You know, he really was. And for the record, he did have the most saves in the NHL.
He was the most saves,
1,987 this year. And it's hard to argue against Pekka Rinne, especially given the physical attributes that he brings to the table. 6'5", 205 pounds. That is a big man, and especially to be as limber and as quick as he is.
And he played 73 games this year, too. So moving that weight around all season, like, the guy.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
When you're looking at a league where you really don't want your starter going 65 or over, even anything 60 plus is really seen as a workhorse kind of season. Yeah. And you know what's funny? The one guy who was actually also nominated for the Hart Trophy is the one guy between the two of us who doesn't get a Vezina vote. Because I'm going with Jonathan Quick.
Fair enough.
And I'm going again based on value to his team. I don't mean to say, and again, you can't say a bad thing about any of these guys this year. It's nothing against Lundqvist.
No.
It is everything for Jonathan Quick. Taking a look, 35 wins on a team that barely squeaked into the playoffs, meaning he was essentially responsible for all of the wins. And not only that, as we mentioned earlier in the show, the Los Angeles Kings finishing second last in scoring and then going on the run that they've gone on is incredible.
Yeah.
If that's not goaltending, what is it? But you know what's an interesting stat, looking at Jonathan Quick, is a stat that not many people look at as a favorable thing, is the 13 overtime losses. Many people will look at that and say, well, that's a sign of a team that gives up leads. That's a sign of a team that maybe doesn't know how to finish off their opponents. I would argue the exact opposite and say that's a sign of a goaltender who keeps a low-scoring team in games that they have no business being in. When you look at a guy with a 1.95 goals against, 10 shutouts, that's the only way you're making the playoffs on the second lowest scoring team in the league, is by stealing games, single-handedly winning hockey games. And when I look at Lundqvist and I look at Rinne, I see two guys who have very strong clubs in front of them, and clubs that bought into a system. Now, we did talk about Daryl Sutter coming in and of course, having a huge influence on the Kings, but realistically, they don't do any of that without Quick. And I just look at value to his team when I pick this award, and I'm going to give it to Quick. I think he's head and shoulders above the competition. And again, it's not a knock on the other guys. It's really a vote of confidence for Quick.
And yeah, if I hadn't have chosen Rene, Quick would have been the second. And
again, or Lundqvist or Smith or...
that's the thing. We'll get to that. Well, yeah, okay. Are we doing our snub votes now? I mean...
yeah, you know what? Yeah, let's get into the snubs. It's a perfect segue for it. Who would you have considered for an award?
Mike Smith? Absolutely.
And you look at a guy who was, in my opinion, from February on, hands down the best goaltender in the National Hockey League.
Bar none.
What have you got on Mike Smith? Justify your case.
Another busy season. 67 games played, 38 wins, 221 goals against, .930 save percentage, and he managed 8 shutouts in that time, too.
Like, yeah, that's impressive.
These numbers have him right up there with those guys, too. If you're looking at numbers, and look at who's in front of him. He doesn't have as much in front of him.
No, he doesn't. Yeah, and you're very right, and it's very similar to my argument for Jonathan Quick. He doesn't have the team in front of him that the other guys necessarily do, which is a great point. And again, it's hard to argue against Mike Smith. It really is.
However,
if I'm picking a snub and I'm going off the board, I've got a guy that I have been exceptionally critical of over the past 6 weeks.
Ilya Bryzgalov?
I'm going to Pittsburgh. No, I'm not going that deep into the woods. I'm looking at Marc-Andre Fleury. And here's a guy who I know has not got great numbers when you look at the traditional goaltending statistics. Goals against average of 2.36. Above average. A good year. Yeah, a very good year even.
I'd be happy with it.
.913 save percentage leaves 11 guys in the league with a better save percentage than him, including guys who you don't think of as exceptionally strong, guys like Jimmy Howard, Antti Niemi, Kari Lehtinen, Craig Anderson. They all had better save percentages than him. But as far as I'm concerned, and this is something I've been trying to pound into your head since we started playing on a beer league team together, there is only one number that counts when you are looking at goaltenders, and that's W's. And Marc-Andre Fleury had the second most wins in the National Hockey League this year of any goaltender with 42.
That's fantastic.
And
second,
you know,
to Pekka Rinne.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And only one less than Pekka Rinne. And on a team missing, it's one of its legitimate superstars, one of the two best players in the world, missing from that lineup, and clearly on a team that had its ups and downs this year, a team that finished fourth and in the conference, and this guy comes up with 42 wins. I'm not certain about his future, but I would be willing to nominate him for the Vezina this year purely based on wins. And that steps outside of all traditionalist thinking. But as I said, this is my show and I'll do what I want to. I look at W's. W's count. At the end of the day, it's the only statistic that means anything in the long run. All the other stuff is nice, but really, it's bells and whistles. If you win, you win. I mean, you know, it's that old Oakland Raider mentality. Just win, baby. Just win.
And you're right. You're absolutely right. 42 wins that's great. That is a hell of a hockey season.
It really is. It really is. And we are sneaking up on the end of the show. Once again, you are listening to Off the Crossbar Live, presented by offthecrossbar.com and backsportspage.com. Check in on each of those sites for all of the news beyond the news. We dig a little deeper than the headlines. We get beyond it. We like to talk about the role that the game plays within our lives, within our society, and within the grand scheme of things. And we also take ourselves a little too seriously, as you can tell by my summary right there. This is going to be where the show peaks. We are going to get into the Hart Trophy, the most valuable hockey player to his club in the entire National Hockey League. You're not going to believe how far off the board I'm going on this one. Stay tuned. We've only got a couple minutes left. Don't you dare turn off your podcast, your radio. This is going to be a good finish. Adam, who are the nominees for the Hart Trophy?
Yeah, I guess I won't do the little preface of the description since you've already said that it is, in fact, the MVP of the team. So.
Most valuable player, too. Well, go ahead, read it off.
All right. We've got...
I didn't do the textbook.
We've got Steven Stamkos of the Tampa Bay Lightning, Evgeny Malkin of the Pittsburgh Penguins, and Henrik Lundqvist, goaltender for the New York Rangers.
Henrik Lundqvist, who we would not pick for a Vezina trophy, but is in the running...
For best dressed.
For best dressed, yes, of course. I'm still amazed at how he wears those suits underneath his equipment.
Incredible.
I'm sure he
and
doesn't take them off.
And they come out with a little ounce of sweat on them. It's magical.
It's nice to be European. So you know what? I'll give you a little bit more of an intro to this one since it is arguably the most sought-after trophy at the end of the year.
Aside from Stanley Cup, that is.
Of course. The most sought-after individual award. Very clear. Thank you for catching me there. Steven Stamkos played all 82 games this year, led the league in goal scoring with a whopping 60 goals, 37 assists to go with it, 97 points in total, which placed him second in the National Hockey League. He was a plus player, a plus seven on a team that did not make the playoffs. A little bit of edge to his game, 66 penalty minutes, 12 goals on the power play, 12 game winners, which is fantastic.
Nice.
And 303 shots on goal. Anytime you get up over that 300 mark, you are looking at a pure goal scorer number. Those are Ovechkin-like totals when it comes to putting pucks on net.
Those totals.
The only knock on Steven Stamkos this year being that he... Adam does not like his hair. And also, of course, that the Tampa Bay Lightning did not make the playoffs, which is traditionally a prerequisite for winning this trophy. How valuable can you be to your team if your team did not make the dance? Which is an interesting point, sort of a school of thought that is changing, as you can see with the Stamkos nomination.
Yeah, you've got to look at it. I mean, 60 goals, for God's sake. Whether or not they made the playoffs, not who cares? He scored 60 goals. He finished second in the league in points.
But the truth, as we say, the value is in winning, and you don't have a chance of winning your last game of the season. How valuable can you be? It's a fair point.
Say it, that's true.
I think he's earned the nomination. I really do. All right, the second nominee for the Hart Trophy for the league's most valuable player is the man who finished ahead of Steven Stamkos, the man who dominated hockey all year, and the man who put the Pittsburgh Penguins on his back when Sidney Crosby was taken down again with another concussion. 75 games played, 50 goals scored, 59 assists, first in the National Hockey League in scoring with 109 points, Evgeny Malkin. Finishing with a plus 18, 70 penalty minutes, again 12 goals on the power play, and one of the few players in the league to take more shots on goal than Steven Stamkos with 339. Is this his trophy to lose?
Yeah, my brain tells me yes. I mean, I'd like to give it to Stamkos just because of the aforementioned, you know, things that he did in the season. But
tough to argue with 60 goals.
Yeah, but you're right. It is how far you go. And, you know, Malkin's in the playoffs and did well, maybe not as well as he wanted to, not as well as any of the Pittsburgh Penguins wanted to. But he's a hell of a hockey player.
He is, and you know what?
And also, Malkin only played 75 games this season. So he could have... He might have been able to catch up to Stamkos.
Yeah, you add 9 games to that, and Malkin could score 10 goals in 9 games. He might not. He's clearly not on pace to do that. But if anyone's capable. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I did the math wrong. Let's move along to Lundqvist. What have we got for Lundqvist? Let's get through his stats again. We'll give it a bit of a framework.
Okay, Lundqvist had 62 games played this year. 39 wins, which was good for third in the NHL. 1.97 goals against, 930 save percentage, and 8 shutouts.
You know what? Those are great numbers. They really are. Yeah. And as I said, good enough for them to be the third best goaltender in the National Hockey League, as far as I'm concerned. Very good. But I think what you're getting when you see Lundqvist nominated for this award is you're getting a reflection of the sentimentality that goes against Steven Stamkos being nominated for the award. You're getting a very good goaltender who led his team to first place in the conference. You're getting a reflection of that mentality of who is most valuable to his team. And I think you're getting a lot of stringent definitions, if you will. Guys who are really sticking to that textbook description of what the trophy is meant to be for. But I don't cap him winning the trophy. I don't think I'm going to shock anybody when we both come out on record and say, if Evgeny Malkin does not win this trophy, I'm not watching the first 10 games of the year next year. I'm going to boycott the NHL. Yeah, I'm calling a fan strike if Malkin does not win this trophy. Listen, we've touched upon it once or twice before in the last few weeks. Evgeny Malkin put the Pittsburgh Penguins on his back in the absence of Sidney Crosby. Led the league in scoring again, thoroughly dominated the National Hockey League, significantly over a point per game, led his team to the playoffs. You just can't argue. You just can't argue with the nomination of Evgeny Malkin. Do you have anything to add? Can you? Is it not Malkin for any reason?
No, unless they just sort of veto it because if Sidney can't win it, no one can.
Ooh, a little anti-Sidney sentiment. All right, we got the Hal Gill in. We've got the anti-Sidney sentiment in.
It's been a full week. The only problem is right now is I'm feeling strangely self-confident because James hasn't been here to, you know, tell me I'm awful at things.
If you want, I can throw a puck past you.
That might be, you know, it could happen. Although these days, I don't know if it would make it past me. I don't know.
That's all right. I'll just put it on the glove side.
Oh, we haven't done our Men With No Name update either. We can finish on that.
We have not. Yeah, we will get to a Men With No Name update then.
Finally, good news.
I think, we actually do have good news. On the Men With No Name front, we have been placed in the proper division.
Yes. However, first we have to get to our snub votes for the
Our snub votes. All right. I'll let you go first because I was, you know, doing the whole tease thing earlier, trying to build up the anticipation.
That was an intentional stutter.
That was actually a Rocky Horror Picture Show reference.
Oh, yeah. That went right over my head.
Going old school on you.
Indeed. Anyhow, my vote, if I were to have a vote, for Hart Trophy of the non-nominated players would be Claude Giroux of the Philadelphia Flyers. 77 games, 28 goals, 65 assists for 93 points, which was good enough for third in the NHL. Plus 6 and 29 penalty minutes.
And a lot of people really genuinely feeling like he should have been nominated above Steven Stamkos because, again, he led his team to the playoffs and really led his team through the first round. Was clearly the most dominant player. Still leads the playoffs in scoring despite having a 9 o'clock tee time this morning.
And it looks like, I mean, looking at the conference finals, no one's going to get past him. You're not going to get people scoring 2-3. You know, nobody's getting hat tricks in the next few games. I mean, just because I've said that.
No, not necessarily. I think Kovalchuk will catch him. He's only, 5 points behind? Something like that. I thought Kovalchuk had 12, or maybe it's 6. Is it 12 to 18?
Give me a second.
Stat monkey climb.
Stat monkey climb.
But yeah, no, Claude Giroux. 17 and 12. So 5 points, yeah.
Yeah.
Kovalchuk is very capable of 3-point games here and there.
Yeah, he's got 2 rounds. You're right. It can, yeah.
And really, every time we've expected a defensive battle this year, we haven't gotten it in the playoffs. So expect the unexpected. Anticipate the unanticipatable.
Yeah, if anybody out there is betting based upon what we say, just do the opposite because it hasn't gone well after the first round for us.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. So again, Giroux, can't go wrong.
No.
Cannot go wrong.
Also needs a haircut, though.
Quality candidate. Adam on his hippie-beating bandwagon.
Damn hippies.
That's as soon as James isn't here, Adam starts taking the cracks at him. Huh? James is at home right now combing his hair crying. So I like your pick. I like Giroux. I think it's difficult to argue. I think it came down to probably a coin toss for a lot of the nominating committee.
Who actually does nominate? How do they choose that?
It's me. They call me. no. To be honest with you, I believe it has to do. It's the Professional Writers Association, as well as several other outlets. I believe there's probably, like I mentioned in my article this week, the Old Boys Club. When you go to the Hockey Hall of Fame, you pull on that dusty old stick in the back, the false sliding wall comes out. You know, you got Glenn Sather there chewing on the stubbed out cigar. It's nice to see. But you know what? I'm going to go way, way, way off the board.
Eric Lindros.
Not that far off the board, although it was great to see him back in Flyers
Indeed.
Orange this year.
It was awesome.
It really was cool to see. And you know what? Nice to see he and Bobby Clarke as well on the ice together after all that nonsense.
Yeah.
Those two grown children beating on each other for years and years in the media. Nice to see them shake hands and make nice, even if it was just for the cameras. I'm going to say my snub for the Hart Trophy, and again, a guy who I don't think necessarily should win the Hart Trophy, and maybe even a bit of a Lifetime Achievement Award, maybe a bit of a soft spot for the guys that I grew up watching, based purely on the definition of being the most valuable to his team.
Drum roll.
I'm looking at the Wizard, Ray Whitney. 40 years old.
Awesome.
And you know what? Again, I don't think he deserves to win the trophy, but if I'm looking for a dark horse nominee, here's a guy who puts up 77 points at the age of 40, plays all 82 games in a season, finishes at a plus 26 playing for the Phoenix Coyotes. Are you kidding?
How is that even possible?
Plus 26, and the guy's my size. He's like 5'9", 175 pounds, soaking wet. Still alive in the playoffs. Taking the young guys in Phoenix and really, you know, putting them on his back, taking them to the promised land. And here's a guy who just refuses to roll over. The Phoenix Coyotes this year were 42, 27, and 13 under his leadership, along with other veterans like Shane Doan. But 77 points at 40?
That's impressive.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And not just 77 points at 40, but a guy who has absolutely, for the duration of his career, refused to quit. He has played for 7 hockey teams over the course of his career. He has been bought out twice, cut twice, and playing at a point per game pace right now. At the age of 40, and again, 5'9". The second draft pick ever in the history of the San Jose Sharks, taken in the second round of the 92 entry draft.
So he's the only living Shark left in the NHL, right?
After 17 years in the league, he is the only remaining member of the inaugural San Jose Sharks team. And you know what?
That's
cool. Awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just plain awesome. I know we're supposed to play the role of insightful expert and this, that, and the other. Listen, you watch a story on Ray Whitney, I get goosebumps. That guy is the perfect embodiment of why I am a fan of the game.
He's a cool cat, man.
He really is. And I love the birthday gesture. sitting in his locker, Ray Whitney turned 40 years of age on the 8th of May, very recently. Arrived at his locker stall in the Phoenix Coyotes dressing room to find that his teammates had purchased a Walker, multiple packages of Bengay, Centrum Silver, Just for Men, Denture Cream, Viagra, the perfect old man kit, as they were calling it. And you know what? Just the kind of thing that you love to see. That says a lot about the character of a guy in the locker room. As James was alluding to last week, he wants to know what guys are like in the locker room. I don't think the Predators are celebrating Radulov's birthday in quite the same manner. I don't know that there's a lot of guys around the league other than the guys like your Hal Gills, the guys who are consummate team players.
Yeah.
They have the reputation of being the ultimate team guy.
Pure class.
Pure class, exactly. That's a great way to put it. That's exactly what I was trying to say, but took 150 words to get there. And another thing about Ray Whitney, you know, reaching the 1,000-point plateau this year. He's sitting at 1,003 right now, which means he was sitting at 926 heading into this season. And now sitting at 926 at 40 years of age, I don't think many people thought he was going to get there this year.
No. No.
It is crazy to see what he has done. An ageless wonder, and really my Hart Trophy nominee, definitely a dark horse, definitely going off the board. But if this ever makes it to the ears of Ray Whitney, Ray, you've got my my vote.
We're going to cut this clip and we're going to tweet it to him.
I would like to see that. I would definitely like to see that. So we are running close to the end of our time here on Off the Crossbar Live. We are going to do a Men with No Name update. We have got good news. Adam, why don't you give everybody a breakdown of the game that happened this past Sunday, and then we'll call it a night.
We won.
We won.
Yes, we were put in a division. We were put in an appropriate division. We won the game 4-1. Our captain here got a hat trick.
Thank you.
Our whole team played solid. The guys are just great. You know, we're gonna win the championship this year.
I would really like that. That's a bold. Did you just say? Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is it. You know what? Let's
do it.
Let's do it. Any of the Men with No Name out there listening right now, the gauntlet has been laid down. Adam wants a championship.
Yeah.
I think we should give it to him.
You guys are fantastic. I love you guys, man. Love it. Oh, and we have wicked new jerseys.
And we have awesome new jerseys. And a big... And they're actually just much harder to find jerseys that are cut from parachutes is the issue. A big thank you going out to our newest assistant captain on the team, actually, as of the arrivals of the jerseys, Roberto Panetta, officially rocking the A on the top corner of his jersey.
Even he is not yet rocking the A because his jersey was backordered.
It's also very difficult to get the ones that are in midget sizes.
The
medium. Who wears a medium over their equipment? Roberto is my size. He's going to be. He's going to have some great wind resistance.
But that's
he's aerodynamic.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. He's Italian, man. He's all about style.
Oh, that is pretty stylish.
Yes.
I like
it's
that.
It's the vegan way.
Well, that is the end. Is that the vegan way?
Apparently. They're stylish people.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
That's fine. I like that Roberto wears the old school Toe Blake coach's hat every once in a while, too.
Yes.
That's classy.
He's a stylish dude.
All right. So that is going to be it for our time. We will see you again next week. You have been listening to Off the Crossbar Live, the shorthanded edition. No bells and whistles on this episode. Nothing but dump and chase radio. Tune in next week, and we will take on the same thing. You will hear my last broadcast as a free man.
That's true.
8 o'clock Eastern on Blog Talk Radio. This has been presented by BackSportsPage.com and, of course, our new home, Off the Crossbar.